Jokic trying to disrupt Rondo. He puts it in. Here's Davis, 4-3 in the win. Oh, it's good! Anthony Davis has won it for the Lakers!
Good morning and welcome to the Daily Ding. Happy Monday morning. We're going to start you off with some thrilling playoff action from the Lakers and the Nuggets. I am Jared Weiss. I'm joined by Mo DeGeele, and we have special guest Kendra Andrews, the Athletics Nuggets beat writer, joining us after this game. We got Jay Hoy hitting all the big orbs behind us here on the board, so do not miss the exclusive in-depth coverage of this unprecedented sports season. We've never seen a bubble season before, and you can subscribe now and you can save. Go to theathletic.com/dailyding and you can receive an all access pass to a subscription to The Athletic, which covers everything that you could imagine. If it's sports, we're writing about it. It's just $1 a month. Sports are back, and you won't want to miss breaking news stories about your favorite teams. You won't want to miss more great podcasts. You won't want to miss what Kendra Andrews is writing for tomorrow morning. It's actually tomorrow morning as you're listening to this right now. So all you got to do is go to theathletic.com/dailyding to receive an all-access subscription for just $1 a month. So coming up on today's show, we usually list three things here, but we're just going to talk about the Lakers and the Nuggets. So let's get right into this. The Lakers, they win 105-103. Anthony Davis with an all-time buzzer-beating three to win this game. Let's get right to it, Kendra. You wrote about Jokic versus AD. This was another classic battle.
Absolutely. And I mean, a lot of people had been not criticizing the matchup, but, you know, giving it all to AD, right? This was Anthony Davis's matchup to win. Nikola Jokic was going to struggle against him, which in all fairness, he did that first game. But down the stretch in game two, Jokic scored 11 straight points for the Nuggets. You know, it was a reminder of why they want him to have the ball when the clock is winding down to take that last shot. He was the reason they had a shot at winning that game too. And Anthony Davis just showed up when his team needed him to show up as well. I mean, it was an insane shot at the very final seconds. The Lakers had two other opportunities to take the lead right before that great three-pointer, but came up short. And it's, you know, Davis said after the game, he goes, "This is why I'm here. This is why this team has me, to make shots like that." So, I mean, heartbreaking loss for the Nuggets, but at the same time, what could they have really done in that situation?
They could have defended the last play correctly. And before we have you, you drop the facts on us that came out of post game, Mo, what the hell happened there?
Let's just be honest. It came down to Mason Plumlee and Jeremy Grant having some sort of miscommunication, depending on what story you want to go with in this scenario. I think for me, the big problem is Plumlee is expecting LeBron to set a screen and that Grant's going to switch out. And that's common practice pretty much for any team I've ever been a part of. Late clock situations, late in games, you're switching every screen. You're going to make sure that you take away any look. Problem is LeBron never sets a screen. So Grant doesn't know that he needs to jump out onto AD. And, you know, that just leads to that open look. And then on top of that too, Jared, this is the other thing that I want to point out. Even if they switch, Plumlee's not in a good position to switch. LeBron has a slip right to the basket. Like, it's still probably a bucket, at the very least a foul. You know, I think this is just a tough scenario there. And, you know, one other thing that's going to go unnoticed, because AD missed the shot, that was a hell of a contest from Jokic. I mean, for him to go from defending the inbounds to run out to AD, I mean, he almost got there in time. It's just unfortunate there that AD knocked it down.
Yeah, so Plumlee was the one that blew that. I mean, it's pretty clear. And despite what all these people that are jumping onto my social media to try to tell me that I should resign from The Athletic and all this crap, here's what happened. So we saw that there was a clip right before the play started where Jeremy Grant is pointing to a spot on the floor where he wants Plumlee to position if he has to take underneath position on LeBron in event of a switch. Here's the problem. Like you said, there was not only was there no screen, but AD cut so far away from LeBron that Plumlee had to like reroute himself. Like it was one of those video game glitches where the player just like slides like he's on ice to like a different slot in the computer's programming. Like he had to completely reroute himself to get into that position. So it was so clear that Plumlee was just thinking, I have to switch here. So if I see AD pass LeBron, I switch. But AD passed so far away that he needed to continue to lock and trail and close out onto AD. And instead, he puts himself, I guess, in the proper underneath position to stop a potential LeBron free roll off of the switch, which also there wasn't enough time left for LeBron to free roll after the inbound to AD. Like they couldn't have done a high-low pass in that kind of time frame. It would have been like a backwards alley-oop, essentially. That would have been almost impossible.
But Jared, it would have been from the inbounds. The ball wouldn't have gone to AD is the point I'm making, right? Like LeBron.
No, I agree with that. But the pass, I think, was already coming as Plumlee was settling in. Either way, clearly Plumlee made that decision before the inbound was coming out of the hands. So like, yeah, we know what he was trying to do there for sure. He just obviously made the mistake of not recognizing that no screen was set and therefore there was no need to switch it. So Kendra, can you tell us what was said after the game so we can find out what the truth is?
I mean, not a whole lot of light was shed on the mishap there. You know,
I am shocked to hear that.
Right? It was funny. Mo Jokic did toot his own horn and said, "You know, I had a pretty good contest on that shot." You know,
I mean, because it's rare, Kendra, when he does that. Like, you got to toot your horn when that happens.
He is a guy who has admitted he does not move fast, so that might have been the quickest I have seen him, you know, get to half court, but. He also
that was the fastest he's moved since he was running down the hallway before the game.
Which I wanted that. We got to get into that a little bit later.
Absolutely, and he also admitted that there was a miscommunication. You know, and that was that he didn't say what the miscommunication was. Malone, he was very short in his responses. He obviously wasn't going to get in it, and you know, said the old, "I gotta go." Review the film. I got to look at the plays before I can give a full analysis of the breakdown there. So I expect people, including myself, to follow up on that next time we get to speak to Coach Malone to see if after he watched the film, what did you see from that last play that kind of broke down with Mason Plumlee right there?
Yeah, I mean, we know that the coach isn't going to go, yeah, my center completely blew the game and pretty much cost us the season.
It would be nice if they did.
Well, I mean, it's always
you could do that after you lose the playoff series. You, right. You got right. Two more games at least to play.
I always love when these coaches have like a photographic memory of every single action that happened during the game. But then when you ask them about something controversial, they're like, you know, I don't remember what happened. I should probably check the film and get back to you after our next
scheduled
film
study. And you know that Michael Malone is one of those coaches. His brain is like a video camera. You know that he is snapshotting every make and miss throughout the entire game.
And, I mean, to be fair, there is some legitimacy to it that like, yeah, they don't want to blame someone from what they saw at the top of their head. And then they go back and they notice that there was actually something that they missed right. on the film. So part of that is prudent, but it's mostly just, you know, coaches just avoiding trying to criticize their players.
Yeah, that's part of the game. But we also got to give the Nuggets a lot of love. Another comeback down 16. Like this was one of those things where, I mean, look, when the Lakers were rolling it, looked like this thing was about to be an avalanche, right? Like they were going to come in. They were partying on the bench. They were goofing off. I mean, after Caruso
they were
has
really
that,
partying.
I mean, they were. They really were, short of having actual drinks on there. You know, they were, you know, like Caruso has that dunk and then it's a timeout and everybody rushes him on the court. And that was in the second quarter. And just, you know, to see the Nuggets continue to just be like, hey, we're going to stay the course. We're going to keep rolling. And, you know, really impressive. Just sort of fortitude. You know, they got big minutes from PJ Dozier, who I don't think played at all in game one. If I'm wrong, somebody correct me.
No, you're right.
I mean, okay, yay. but, you know, I think, you know, big plays there. He took a couple of charges, got to the rim, unfortunately missed some free throws. But, you know, overall, just for them to be able to stay in this game and come back was pretty impressive in my mind. I feel like, I mean, the thing that's going to hurt is this is a game they probably could have stole, should have stole.
Yes. I mean, I thought they were going to win this game. You know, I predicted that they were going to come out after game one with the correct made adjustments, with a little bit more energy, and figure out how to pull this one out. And they definitely could have. And I think a big issue for them was that, I can't exactly remember the timestamp, but at one point, Paul Millsap, Jeremy Grant, Gary Harris were just a combined 3 of 13. That's not going to get this done, especially when you have Alex Caruso doing everything that he did in game two, right? When you have what Rajon Rondo did in game one, when you have Dwight Howard coming off the bench, right? Like, the Lakers bench has been showing up. The Nuggets need those guys to produce more. Michael Porter Jr. was pretty strong. He finished with 15 points, but, you know, they need those two-way players in Grant, Millsap, and Harris to be two-way players. And they haven't really been able to do that against the Lakers.
Yeah, I mean, it's just tough. Like, you need to get those. I mean, it's hard. If only Jokic and Murray give you 30 and 25, like, you know, Porter, like you said, with 15, you need the other guys to step up. They need to knock down shots and things like that. I feel for the Nuggets fans, because I thought this was going to be a win when they started to come back.
Right. So we've seen it before, right? Like, this is exactly what happened with the Clippers. That momentum starts to shift there in the third quarter. And it's they can do this, because they've proven that they can do it. And I think that that's probably one of the biggest differences between the Clippers and the Lakers that the Nuggets are still maybe getting used to, is that against the Clippers in those third quarters, yes, the Nuggets made those runs, but that's also when the Clippers started to shoot themselves in the foot. And the Lakers aren't going to do that. So the Nuggets need to figure out how to continue to go on these runs as they have, but just push it a little bit more, because the Lakers aren't going to do them any favors.
The funny thing was that, I mean, we're talking about the Nuggets as if, like, this was a bad game and they blew and they lost. Yeah. Like, they lost the game on a pretty, like, all-time great shot. And Jokic also did an amazing job defending AD's little floater right before that, too. I feel like Jokic, I mean, do you guys feel like Jokic is kind of living up to his role in the series and doing what he needs to do to give them the advantage?
I think so. I think, especially in this game, he did. I think something that's challenging for Jokic that he hasn't faced in this playoff so far is that, because not many teams other than the Lakers have the ability to do this, but he never gets relief when he's on the court, right? Like, in that first series against the Jazz, when Rudy Gobert wasn't on the court, Jokic had a little break from dealing with that. And then, you know, the Clippers, obviously, their center matchups aren't quite the same with Zubac and stuff. And that's no disrespect to them. It's just not the same. But now you're playing against the Lakers, who have LeBron James, Anthony Davis, Dwight Howard, AD, JaVale McGee, right? Like, no matter who's on the court, there's always going to be another 7-footer. And so Jokic can never have that time to do a little mismatch and have a size advantage on whoever he's going up against. And I think, at least in game two, I think he dealt with that better than he did in game one.
Yeah. Well, we saw him back down Anthony Davis like he had a mouse in the house there. So yeah. I think anyone besides Dwight, he's going to be able to take him wherever he wants.
Yeah. And that was a big play there. Just being able to kind of just back down Davis, basically from the 3-point line on in, and bully his way to the rim. But the other thing, too, that I thought was great that they did in this game, that they didn't do so well in game one, was they punished the Lakers every time they switched a guard onto him, you know, for the most part. Every now and then there were a couple of times where, and I got upset and I tweeted a video of it every now and then, you know, when Jokic would hang around on the 3-point line when he had a guard. But most of the time, whenever he had a Caruso, a KCP, a Danny Green, he went into the post and forced the Lakers to double. And we all know, you know, when you double Jokic, he's going to find the pass. He hit Jamal Murray for a big three late in the game. You know, when AD went to go double, it's those kinds of things. I think beyond Jokic just living up to his standards in this game, I think he's been phenomenal throughout the entire playoff run. And, you know, Kendra broke it down perfectly. Like, the Lakers just present a whole different challenge just because they just have bigs on top of bigs on top of bigs.
And then they have their biggest player of all on the other side for Denver, PJ Dozier.
And hero.
This show was originally supposed to be a 25-minute tribute to PJ Dozier, but we'll have to cut the segment down to just a couple minutes. Kendra, we've seen him come up big. And it's funny because looking at his box score stat line, it's actually pretty bad. But that was not what he was doing out there. I mean, besides going 1-for-5 and he didn't capitalize on some of those fouls that he drew, he was pretty huge in this game, taking on almost any defensive assignment he had to, including LeBron, and also kind of keeping that offense going when it was kind of stalling out a little bit.
Oh, yeah. I mean, he was the charging king in the sense that he drew like 3 fouls. You know, he just planted his feet and let whichever Laker had the ball just barrel into him. And he was like, yeah, that's my role tonight. And then he had that great and one opportunity. And yes, he did miss his free throws. After the game, someone asked Jokic about that and his face when the reporter said, you know, Dozier kind of, you know, messed up by not hitting those free throws. Jokic made that little frowny, pouty, confused face that he does to say, I don't think that was the game changer there, and spoke very highly of PJ and just the development that he's had over this season. He said, you know, people don't get to see his development because he doesn't get to play very often, but he's totally bought into the process of which the Nuggets have assigned him, I guess. And I mean, he's been a good player for them this entire season. He gives them some more size at the guard position, and he's just a like scrappy player. He's just there to do what he needs to do, and I think that we saw that in game 2.
Yeah, I mean, he was phenomenal. I mean, stepping in and taking those charges, I mean, drawing a charge on LeBron is hard enough just in general, and then for him to be able to do it and you know, step in on that one. I think the other one was on Kuzma. I think, you know, just overall, I think he's going to be a great player. And he was big in some of the Utah and Clipper games, too. It's not like this is the first time we've seen him step up big time in the playoffs. But the other thing, too, Jared, I want to point out more towards the Lakers side. Like, I mean, the thing that's scary for the Nuggets is, you know, I don't think you're going to get LeBron playing another terrible second half the way he did tonight, you know. 2-for-9 for just 6 points, 4 turnovers. Like, I think, you know, this is where it's going to come back to hurt them, you know, overall in the sense of blowing this game, just because, like, you're not going to get that. I don't think the Lakers are going to have 24 turnovers in another game this series, you know, and maybe even not the rest of the playoffs. So, like, that, those are the things, like, the Nuggets really have to capitalize on.
And the incredible thing is Jokic had 4 steals. He had the most steals of anyone in this game. To get that kind of defensive playmaking out of someone who generally you're just hoping can survive on defense, that's the thing that I feel like they're really missing out on capitalizing on. And it's funny because one of these talking points I kept hearing after this game was, whose team is the Lakers? Is it LeBron's or Anthony Davis's? And I think the thing we clearly saw tonight is that it's not about that. It's about the fact that it's both of these guys can dominate and take over a game when the other one isn't. And we saw that LeBron had a dominant first half. AD really came through for them in the second half. And, you know, Jokic and Murray kind of have a little bit of that balance there. And obviously Michael Porter Jr. comes up with some huge plays every once in a while to kind of turn things around. But Kendra, does it feel like Denver's offense, which is the kind of their huge strength, can't even really keep up with the fact that either LeBron or AD at either any point is going to be basically taking over?
It's going to be a challenge. And that's why I said, you know, how important it's going to be for, which I feel it's like saying the obvious, but it's like, that's why it's so important for everyone on the Nuggets team to get involved in scoring the ball and stuff like that. But I mean, I completely agree with you guys that it is a little discouraging for them that they did put together a really good offensive game and did, you know, whether they were forced or the Lakers committed those turnovers themselves, that they happened, right? And it is discouraging to know that, I mean, it's encouraging to know that this game was won on a freak shot, but it's also discouraging that they couldn't close out the game because they made the right adjustments from game one. You know, their transition defense, it did have problems. It wasn't perfect by any means, but it was better at least than what we saw in game one, which was the big issue there. But it is just a question of, okay, where do they go from here? What else do they have that can really combat what the Lakers have been doing? And I don't know if it's something that they can practice. You know, I don't know if it's something that it's, hey, you guys, we just need to practice rebounding or whatever it is, or if it's just a matter of execution and a little bit of hope and praying. So I think, you know, the Nuggets are a team because they have been down so many times these playoffs that they're obviously not going to put their heads down or, you know, feel pity or bad for themselves. But at the same time, it's like being down 2-0, especially against this Lakers team, it's not full panic, but you definitely have to kind of raise an eyebrow and really start figuring this stuff out.
I mean, let's be honest. The Nuggets don't play until they're down 3-1.
Michael Malone even said that he wished he lobbied for the series to start with them 3-down and the league didn't approve it.
Well, that was my first thing in any preview I was on. I said, the first thing Mike Malone has to do is convince everybody they're down 3-1 before game one.
Yeah. And it is interesting how the team, for some reason, can't play the way they do when they're down 3-1 until they're actually there. You know, it's interesting to me how they can't tap into that mindset. Because wouldn't you prefer to not be down 3-1? Yeah. And like, I don't know. Like, I just feel like it's okay. Okay, let's use the motivation of not being down 3-1 to get off to a better start. It's a really interesting psychological thing to me.
It's almost psychopathic a little bit. You feel like you need to have that knife hanging over your head before you can decide to go for it the way they do. But they've also been such a resilient team. Mm-hmm. Oh, and this is something, and I'll take the hits from Nuggets fans. This is something I didn't think they had in them. You know, two different times to come back 3-1. That's a resiliency. That's a toughness that I didn't know they had before this playoffs.
I don't think you're alone in that. I didn't think that about them. You know, I was mentally prepared. I was every game I went into, I was like, okay, this is going to be it. Okay, this is going to be it. And then we're still here, and it's really, you know, this team has obviously grown so much in the last however many weeks they've been in this, the last 10 games that they've played. No, not 10. However many games that they've played in the playoffs so far. But hopefully all of this adversity that they're facing now next season will allow them to tap into that mindset before they actually are in do or die mode.
Talking about erectile dysfunction isn't easy. Usually we just brush it off or we blame ourselves, saying things like, I lost my mojo, or we just avoid it altogether with excuses like, I had a long day at work, or sorry, honey, I'm not feeling it, or I just watched Anthony Davis hit a three against my favorite team. But with Roman, it's easy to talk about it. With a real healthcare professional who can prescribe real medication, it's simple, it's safe, and it's totally discreet. And so with Roman, you can get a free online evaluation and ongoing care for ED, all from the comfort and, most importantly, the privacy of your home. A healthcare professional will work with you to find the best treatment plan. And if medication is appropriate, Roman will just ship it to you with free 2-day shipping. The whole process, it's straightforward, it's simple, and most importantly, it is discreet. And getting started is simple. You just go to GetRoman.com/ding and complete an online visit. Erectile dysfunction, it used to be tough to tackle, but now there's Roman. Complete an online visit today to connect with a healthcare professional and take care of it. Go to GetRoman.com/ding today. If approved, you will get $15 off your first order of ED treatment. That is GetRoman.com/ding. GetRoman.com/ding. And we'll be right back after this. And now here's Tass Mellis of No Dunks to talk about Indochino.
Hey, I'm Tass Mellis of No Dunks on The Athletic. Do you want to walk into a room with your chest puffed out, your neck long, and your shoulders broad? Of course you do. For me, getting clothes that fit properly can give me the confidence I need to do just that. Indochino hooked me up with the gear that fits perfectly. I dreaded getting dressed for my Zoom meetings, but now I change for each one with a big smile on my face. I did a virtual fitting on Indochino's slick website for them to get my measurements. I didn't have to talk to a single human. There are so many options. Here are a few I chose. A long shirt, because I tuck it in. I got a No Dunks monogram, and I decided against the shirt pocket. I sincerely did not think that custom fit clothing was this affordable, and all customizations are included in the cost. The website keeps your measurements on file so you never have to re-enter them. The best part, Indochino suits start at just $2.99 with all customizations included. Indochino is a no-brainer if you're getting married. Visit one of the Indochino showrooms across North America. Or book a virtual appointment like I did and shop online at Indochino.com. And right now, you'll get $30 off any purchase of $3.99 or more when you enter code TASS, not ass, TASS, T-A-S, at checkout. That's Indochino.com, promo code TASS.
All right, well, there's no news to get to. Amazingly, there's not really a single piece of news that's even worth discussing at this point outside of this game. So let's just look ahead to game three on Tuesday night. There's no game Monday, finally a night off, which we all obviously needed a break from incredible playoff action. But game three, Kendra, what is the X factor that you're looking at to decide basically whether this is a win or go home situation?
Right. Well, heading into this series, I have the X factor, and I know I've mentioned it two times tonight so far, so I'm sorry that I'm repeating myself. But again, it's those bench players. You know, I had Paul Millsap and Jeremy Grant as two big X factors for this series, so I'm really going to be watching how they help out Nikola Jokic and Jamal Murray in game three.
For me, I'm going to be focused a little bit on their shooting, especially their three-point shooting. I mean, as a team going 8-24, that's not going to cut it. Like that, they need to shoot better than that. They need to get at least 33s up. I think they need to get better looks in that scenario. And I'm going to cheat here, Jared, and throw in another one. I'm going to continue to watch for Jokic constantly posting up the guards every time they switch onto him.
I can't believe you've done this. That would be my big X factor is Jokic going to try to really, really force deeper and deeper position? And then, of course, get his guards some DHOs that are even deeper so they can get a foot in the paint and actually finish. And I do expect Denver to actually turn it around in this game. And then the other thing I'm looking for is how many times are the broadcasters going to talk about how Alex Caruso looks like an old white man?
Well, importantly, I have a request. I don't ever do this on the ding. But Kendra, I need you, if you can, find out what's the story with this hallway run that Jokic does.
I'll look into it.
Yeah, I was just very, if you can.
Can you get a speedometer in there and just like find out how fast he's running?
I'll see if Sammy can get something for us in there.
When he's running past stationary objects, I mean, the guy looks like Usain Bolt out there. It's amazing. Right.
Yeah. I mean, he lost a lot of weight, so maybe he's feeling a little bit more sprightly when he's on his own. And then when he's out there with LA, who is one of the fastest paces in the league, it's kind of a, oh crap, maybe I'm not where I thought I was, but I'll look into that for us.
Forget skinny Jokic, he's sprinty Jokic now. And that is going to do it for today's show. Do not forget about the other basketball shows across the Athletic Podcast Network. We still have your favorite shows like the Athletic NBA show, No Dunks, Tampering, House of Strauss, plus over a dozen team-specific shows available from some of your favorite Athletic beat writers like Kendra Andrews and Rainbow Skyline, which is my favorite name for a podcast of all time. So don't forget to follow on the app to get notifications for new episodes and utilize the podcast episode comment section. And if you're not a member of The Athletic, you're in luck because you can get all of our podcasts ad-free, plus some fantastic writing across all major sports, all for a super low price. You get a subscription today by going to theathletic.com/dailyding. You never know when these promos end, even though I've been saying that this entire time I've worked here, so get here soon. Thank you for waking up with us. Kendra, you take us out of here tonight.
Wait, sorry.
I forgot. I should have told you. You say ding, ding. in.
Okay.